Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, the Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go!
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there, nobody's touching!
Trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
Welcome to episode 148 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's Sir Peter Jones and the Average Cheesehead Dale Lobel. And no Todd. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at DDGCustoms.com. Thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. Like I said, Peter, I don't have a 48 in my head, so it's your time to shine. Who's 48 today?
Well, 48 is another one of those numbers where there doesn't appear to be a large number of star players, but there was one guy that kind of stood out when I researched this number. Yet another defensive back. So we've done quite a few defensive backs recently, but that's cornerback Ken Ellis, a pretty damn good cornerback early to mid 1970s. So he played six seasons for the Packers from 70 to 75, wearing that number 48 throughout his Packers career. Was a fourth round choice of the Packers out of Southern University. Played wide receiver in college, but was moved to corner by the Packers before his first season started due to a whole bunch of reasons, including injuries and holdouts and player strikes and all sorts. So he was never intended to play corner, but moved to corner and quickly earned a starting job in the second game of his rookie season, and had three interceptions in that rookie season as corner, and then started again in 1971 and had a really good year. Six interceptions that year, leading the Packers in interceptions, but also took part in a very unusual play, something we don't see very often, and that was he returned a missed field goal 100 yards for a touchdown. That's not a play that you see very often at all. You know, a field goal that drops short and gets returned for a touchdown. We've seen it once or twice, but doesn't happen very often. And it's believed that touchdown by Ken Ellis in 1971 was the very first time that had happened in NFL history. And then in 1972, I guess he probably had his best year as a pro, had four interceptions, and earned All-Pro, Pro Bowl, All-NFC honours in that Packers team that went on to win the NFC Central Division that year. He also returned punts at a league-leading, get this, 15.4 yards per punt average.
Wow.
Including one that was returned for a touchdown. Really good year in 72, followed that up with another Pro Bowl year in 73. Continued as the starter in 74 and 75, made a Pro Bowl 74. So it was a really good corner for that period of time. But he also had a couple of contract disputes playing out his option years, and that's kind of the period of time when the Packers seemed to be getting into contract difficulties. They weren't able to come to a deal with Ted Hendricks, who had that one fantastic year for the Packers and then went on to play for the Raiders and be a Hall of Famer. And in the end, the Packers traded Ken Ellis in 1976, prior to the 76 season, and it was a pretty significant trade for the Packers. He was traded to the Oilers along with John Hadle, a couple of draft picks, and coming the other way was Lynn Dickey. That's how Lynn Dickey came to the Packers. And from that point onwards, from 76 onwards, Ken Ellis's career kind of took a little bit of it stagnated, I would say. He played in just another 32 NFL games after his trade for five different teams.
Wow, that's a lot of teams.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, for the Packers, he played in 83 games, started in 82, which is pretty good for a guy that was never intended to be a corner in the first place. Like I said, he earned some All-Pro honours, Pro Bowl honours, and notched up 20 interceptions and three touchdowns in his time as a Packer. Kind of really good coverage corner, man-to-man coverage corner, big play guy, and was inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame in 1998. Oh. So a really good corner, and played part of that his career for the Packers, I never mentioned this, alongside Willie Buchanan, who we talked about a few weeks ago. So that was probably one of the really top corner pairings that the Packers have ever had, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, they had some great ones in the 60s, but from, you know, probably 1970 onwards, it's got to be one of the top ones that they've ever had.
All right. So let's move on. We have one question from friends, Peter. It's from Eric from Greendale, frequent flyer to the Average Cheese. So Eric asks, what caused the Packers to be so suddenly good? if you listen a couple weeks ago, we were talking about how we might go on a 5-game losing streak. And here we are now, 6-6, talking about the playoffs, possibly.
Playoffs?
Peter, by the way, first, before you answer that, are you wearing a Rich Campbell hoodie today?
It is number 19, so yeah, it could be.
Nice.
It could be.
Okay, so let's go back to the question. Todd, it's good to see you, by the way. I didn't know you were coming. I'm glad you're here.
I'm in. I'm all in.
What caused the Packers to be so suddenly good in the last few weeks?
With all of these things, I think there's a number of factors. I don't think they were ever bad. If you look at some of the defeats earlier in the season, other than the first Lions game, the Packers were in all of the other games, and a play here and a play there, and the Packers could have won a number of those games. You know, you look at the Falcons game and the Steelers game. Two or three of those games could have gone the other way, and all of a sudden you're 8-4 or whatever it might be. So I don't think they were ever bad. Jordan Love has clearly progressed as the season's gone on. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, we've seen that in particular in the last two or three games. Been very, very good. But I think probably the biggest difference, I would say, particularly in the last few weeks, is the wide receiver group. When we talked about them growing up together, I don't want to say all of a sudden, but rather than one or two guys making plays in one game and then a different couple of guys the next game, I think they all now seem to look like they're getting open, making plays, and changing the wide receiver group. The growth in the wide receiver group for me is probably the biggest single difference.
I think there's like some rejuvenated sense of confidence in this team too. I don't want to call it like a development team, but somewhere along the line, the team kind of came together and decided that we're no longer this youngest team in the NFL, and we can just kind of shed all of our misfortunes on the fact that we're just young. I think at some point within the last 3 to 4 weeks, they put a stake in the ground and just decided that no, we're actually a good team and we're confident that we can win and that we can kind of beat anybody. And I think that's where it's kind of evolved. A couple of weeks ago, I was ready to just throw everything into the, you start looking at the draft. Everybody does that, right? When things aren't going well, you're like, all right, the draft, look to next year, you know, but they've turned it around. They're not giving up and they're fighting.
I mean, you hear it all the time that young teams grow up, and when rookies aren't rookies by week 10 or 11, 12, whatever it is, well, here we are, right? We're at week 13 coming up next week. They're not rookies anymore. They're playing like guys who have gotten NFL snaps.
And there is no doubt about the receiver group, like Peter mentioned. That is just such an exciting, just a great group. Any one of those guys at any time can make a contribution. Being the youngest team in the NFL and kind of being written off, which I did, admittedly, they somehow have battled through all the injury problems as well. They've battled through it and found ways, and guys have stepped up and filled those slots. And, you know, here we are at 6-6. What more can you say?
Just to finish on that, for me, guys have been hurt. Guys have gotten playing time. That's kind of like a best case scenario. If you can win games with your second stringers and then your first string guys come back healthy, you also have guys that can come in from play to play and there's not a huge drop off. That's what good teams do. I'm not going to say the Packers are a great team right now, but they're building depth while winning, and that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, look at the experience of like Tucker Kraft is getting right now. Malik Heath, you know, those guys that are, yeah, wouldn't see this playing time if it weren't for the injuries. That stuff is going to stand them in really good stead. I think the other thing, it's interesting how once the passing game has started to click, which it has in the last 3 or 4 games, how it's opened up the running game or vice versa. But now they look like they can move the ball on the ground, even with Aaron Jones out.
Yeah, and we don't know where Aaron Jones is going to be for this game against the Giants again. Now, we record on a Monday. Hopefully something will come about. We'll have some kind of updates on Jaire, Aaron Jones. Who gives a
Stokes.
Shit about Josiah DeGuara? Stokes,
we don't care.
Also. No, we don't care about DeGuara. We do care about Stokes. It would be nice to get him back, especially when you don't have Jaire. But we don't know. And Musgrave is still on injured reserve. So there will be some guys missing in this game as well. We'll get into the Giants depth chart in a minute. But this is not a very good Giants team. So you start to think, is this a time to sit Jaire one more week, sit Aaron Jones one more week, sit Stokes for games where it matters? I don't know. I mean, every game matters. But can you win this game? We'll talk about this later without the guys on injured reserve and that are injured right now. Peter, let's talk a little Packers-Giants history. Now, this is a team we played a bunch of times throughout the history of the NFL.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to the 1920s. So 1928, the first time these two teams played. And the Packers lead the series 34-27-2, or ahead in the playoff games 5-3. So there's quite a bit of playoff history between these two teams. And as this upcoming game is on a Monday night, the Packers and Giants have met twice on Monday Night Football, 82 and 83, and each of them won one of those games. But yeah, long history. Bizarrely, when I was doing some research on this, I found that the Packers and Giants played in preseason every year from 1952 to 1970. They didn't play in 51, but they also played in a number of years consecutively before that, which is kind of strange. I think we would think it's strange now. I guess back in those days, perhaps not so strange, but a little bit odd. All three of us were at the last game that the Packers and Giants played each other in London.
Yeah, didn't go like we planned, but
we had fun despite what happened on the field.
They need to go play in Germany so we can all go to that game too, whenever that happens. Anyway, sorry, continue.
That's okay. And of course, you can't mention the Packers and Giants, I think, without mentioning the Vince Lombardi. Vince was the offensive backfield coach for a number of years before coming to the Packers. And when Vince was coaching the Giants offense, Tom Landry was coaching the Giants defense at the same time. So that's a pretty good couple of assistant coaches.
Right. Wow. That looks like Holmgren staff.
Yeah. They used to reckon that Jim Lee Howell, who was the head coach of the Giants at that time, pretty much didn't do anything. You know, just delegated stuff off to, I wouldn't say he didn't do anything, but he delegated stuff off to Landry and Lombardi. And
why wouldn't those guys?
Let those guys get on with it. It's a series that's had quite a number of great games in it, which started in 1929, the first probably great game. Certainly in Packers history, that was the first year, the first championship year for the Packers, and they were vying for the championship with the Giants. This was prior to playoffs, so it was all done on league standings. And the Packers played the Giants late in that 1929 season and won that game. And whilst they didn't actually win the championship till the following year, that was the game that pretty much decided that 1929, the Packers' first championship. And that's one of the great games in Packers history, certainly in early Packers history. And remembered, bizarrely enough, in today's terms, but not back then, as one of the great punting performances from Vern Llewellyn. So punting was really key because field position was really key back in those days. And unofficially, he had a 90-yard punt in that game. Yeah, without going on too much more, I mean, the Packers have won a number of championship games over the Giants. 39, 44, 61, 62 were all Packers winning NFL championships in games versus the Giants. And I guess one other piece of trivia. In 1940, the Packers flew to play the Giants in New York, and that was the first time an NFL team had ever flown to play a game.
Oh,
wow.
November 1940.
That's really interesting. I don't know where you find this stuff, Peter.
Well, I'm full of useless information, I can tell you.
I don't know.
On that topic,
useless information?
Yes. They have one of the more unusual names in the NFL, like Giants. Where did that originate from? Not to put you on the spot.
That I don't know.
Is just, usually you can attribute it to
Acme Packing Companies and so on. Right.
Something, right? I don't know if it was like the Skyscrapers or that's kind of interesting to really unusual, right? New York Giants.
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't really answer the question, but I'm guessing that their name came from the baseball team who were the New York Giants. The New York Giants baseball team, who then eventually ended up in San Francisco. And that's why you hear them called the New York Football Giants.
Yeah.
But how the baseball team got its name, I would have to go look. I don't know.
Interesting to me that they played a lot of games in the preseason when they were playing each other in like the NFL championship later on. Why would you want to play that team in the preseason? It would make more sense to play the Vikings in the 60s in the preseason and the Bears and teams that are geographically in your region, at least. The Giants aren't close.
And I guess it may have continued through the 60s because of the relationship that Vince had with the Giants and with Wellington Mara, who owned the Giant, or the Mara family that owned the Giants, because Vince went to Fordham with Wellington Mara. So it may have continued through that relationship, because it was Wellington Mara that recommended the Packers to go and interview Vince for the Packers job.
I just cheated. I looked it up on Google.
Nice. Well, go tell us.
So the baseball Giants got their name from the giant buildings in New York City.
You already said that. You didn't even
know.
Have to do
I knew. I did not. I just did. I know.
Purveyor of useless information.
Yes, I have an expertise in that area for some reason.
The New York Jets were originally the New York Titans. And I wonder whether that name came from Titans being big. I don't,
right.
I don't know.
Right, right.
They had
right.
to one up the Giants.
Yeah.
Be the Titans.
I don't know.
Well, now San All Francisco is stuck with the Giants and they don't even probably know or care.
Okay. So let's get on to their coaching and executive staff. The GM is Joe Schoen. Nobody, never heard of him, hasn't done much, been there since 2022, probably won't be there much longer if they don't figure that mess out. Brian Daboll, wasn't he coach of the year last year? I think he was.
I believe he was, yeah.
Second year with the Giants, went 9-7-1, made the playoffs, played really well in that first game and then just got absolutely exposed. Offensive coordinator at Alabama and with Buffalo. I love the name Wink Martindale, the game show host. He's the defensive coordinator of the Giants, offensive coordinator Mike Kafka. None of these guys jump off the page. Peter and I were looking through it before we went on the show. Brian Cox, former linebacker, is the only name that might stick out to our listeners and to me. There's not even a fun name to make fun of, really. It's so good. Giants, do better. Damn it. Peter, Packers that were with the Giants.
Yeah, well, I remember a couple of weeks ago when we were previewing the Lions game, we managed to find Corey Ballantyne, who had previously played for the Lions. So it seems to be because Corey Ballantyne, now we've found out, also played for the Giants. Played 2 years with the Giants. In fact, was drafted by the Giants in 2019 and played 2 years, 2019 and 2020, for the Giants. Presumably then before moving on to the Lions and then to the Packers. So whenever we come across this question each week, the place to start looking is Corey Ballantyne.
Right. Whoever we play, just look and see if you played for them already.
But yes, the only player that I found that's with the Packers that played for the Giants, and I couldn't find any that were on the Giants roster that have been with the Packers, nor any Badgers on the Giants roster either.
I see that you have Gray Rugemer played with the Giants, who is now a Packer executive. I don't even know what to call him. Director of player engagement. Remember him playing with the Packers? He isn't on Todd's shit list team, is he? Gray Rugemer? Not yet. We might need a guard. No, there's plenty. You know, there have been people who on Twitter who are like, man, we can't wait for that team to come out. Yes.
I need to pay attention to that.
You need to start writing these names down as they come into your head so we can start to fill out the lineup. I will help you.
The linebacking crew would be Blake Martinez played for the Giants, didn't he?
Yes. He's no longer with the Giants. He's going to jail, I think.
Remember, made like he was some like, weird comeback this year. Blake Martinez? He's with the Raiders. I don't know. He's got all kinds of shit going on.
Yeah, because remember who you're talking about? I don't remember what this was like many moons ago. We're talking about Blake Martinez, and he was making all this money selling Pokemon cards or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, he was scamming people.
That's right. Yeah, he was.
He was scamming people out of the money. He's probably back in the NFL because he's going to have to pay a gigantic fine for that.
He went to the school of Brett Favre.
He did.
Brett, what, how do I do this?
How do I scam people for money?
How do I do this? We're both and he was former very Packers. Successful. How do I do this? And Brett was like, all right, let me show you.
Isn't it like a gigantic red flag if you're making millions of dollars selling Pokemon cards? Someone has to go, that doesn't seem right. Back to actual football, bunch. Peter. 2023 Giants draft. Anybody on here that you really liked coming out of college?
Name that jumped out at me in their draft was Jalin Hyatt, the wide receiver at Tennessee. And I guess he kind of came to the fore midway through that senior season when he caught 5 touchdown passes against Alabama.
That'll do it.
That will do it. Yeah. So actually the top of their draft was pretty good. I think they've got pretty good value for Banks and Schmitz and then Hyatt, I thought it's one of those guys that I think that, you know, if he was there for the Packers, as it turns out, it didn't matter because the Packers picked really well at wide receiver. But he's one of those guys that the Packers have picked in, say, round 2 or round 3, you'd have really liked that pick. So, yeah, Jalin Hyatt would be the guy that kind of leaps off the page for me.
They didn't do very well at the end of the draft, though. First of all, fuck Old Dominion. I apologize to any listener that went there, but fuck them for dropping their wrestling team. Trey Hawkins in the 6th round from Old Dominion. He was 519th. Now, Peter, I don't know how deep your draft board goes, but 519 has got to be close to the end, no?
No.
No?
Unfortunately not, no. And it seems to get big. It seems to get bigger every year.
So you have over 600 names on your draft board?
Oh, it's in four figures this year.
No kidding. Wow. That's amazing. All right. So their season so far has been awful. Actually, not terrible considering that Daniel Jones is not playing quarterback. When your starting quarterback goes down, you're going to lose games. I think they're on quarterback three because didn't they have Tyrod Taylor playing for them for a little bit?
Yeah.
Now it's like Danny DeVito or something like that is playing quarterback for him. Who Danny lives DeVito. At home with his mama? Huh?
Tommy DeVito, but yeah.
Tommy DeVito, yeah.
DeVito.
Actor Danny DeVito.
He definitely couldn't throw the ball over the line. Over the offensive line. There's no way.
They've scored 14 points or less in almost every game, in like two-thirds of their games, which is going to make the Packers' defense look even better than usual this week.
Saquon Barkley, is he in or out?
Yeah, he should be in. He missed, had an ankle injury earlier in the season, but he's been playing.
God, that sucks. That sucks for him.
Well, hurt, and then come now he's back, should be healthy.
Back. And then,
as a third-string quarterback playing in front of him, like everybody in the stadium knows that Saquon Barkley is the guy that's going to have to move the ball for him, yes. So they're playing decently. Now, they did play Washington and New England in the last two games, and New England would only be able to score points on defense at this point. It's a win. You can only play the teams in front of you. Washington, gosh, I don't know. Washington is a little bit strange, but again, they're on a hot streak, so to speak. Any thoughts initially, Todd, on New York?
They're kind of swirling down the drain, I think. They're just not a good football team. They've lost a bunch of pieces. They had a lot of momentum last year, and it sucked that we flew all the way to London to watch them beat us. but we got to meet Peter, so there's always a positive in
every story. So,
yeah. I think the Packers have a very good opportunity to win this game handedly. If they just kind of continue the momentum that they have, they're just playing well right now. And I don't think the Giants are at the point of doing anything to get in the way of that.
Peter, thoughts on New York?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Giants, it's amazing to think that they've won four games and have won the last two games. They can't score. They're 32nd offense, the worst offense in the league, 28th on defense. They gave up nearly 650 yards to Dallas 3 weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
It was like a college game.
So for them to have actually won the last two games, albeit, you know, the last one against New England, but they beat Washington, who on their day can play some teams close and get the odd win here and there. So they've done well to win those two games with the third string quarterback, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you just look at them this season and I don't know whether the amazement is how they've managed to win four games this season or how did they manage to make the playoffs last season. I'm not quite sure.
You know, we said this, though, last year, that they weren't a good football team.
Right.
And they weren't. I mean, the Packers played poorly in London, and we go back and listen to that episode if you'd like. So you look at their skill talent, and you go, Saquon Barkley is it. That's the only guy that you would want to have on your roster. The rest of the guys, no. Jalin Hyatt, middle-of-the-road wide receiver in the 60s on his PFF grade. Darius Slayton, Wandell Robinson. Like, you look at all these guys, and you're like, they're fine. They're just guys. Darren Waller was a good tight end 3 or 4 years ago. He's hurt. On defense, Peter, who scares you on defense?
It's interesting because Kayvon Thibodeau is the one that puts up the numbers. You know, he's leading the Giants in with 11 sacks and 12 tackles for loss, etc. And so on the basis of those numbers, that's the guy that would scare you, you know, particularly generating a pass rush. I've not watched enough of the Giants to work out how his PFF grade ranks him as the 76th ranked edge defender in the NFL when he's got...
With 11 sacks?
With 11 sacks.
He sucks at everything else.
Well, that probably implies that Dexter Lawrence, who's now injured but plays inside at defensive tackle, who's the number one ranked defensive tackle according to PFF, probably generates a lot of double teams and a lot of that pressure that the other guys benefit from a stats perspective. Dexter Lawrence is hurt. He may or may not play next Monday. If he doesn't play, that's a big miss for the Giants and clearly will help the Packers inside and be able to help the running game inside. There isn't anybody on that defense that scares me.
If Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't scare you with 11 sacks, then nobody does. I don't know which side of the offensive line he will line up on. If he lines up against Zach Tom, I'm good. I'm good. We'll have to talk about this in the offseason, but does he move across to the other side at some point as good as he is right now? You said it before, Peter. How do they win any games if they are ranked 32nd on offense and 28th on defense? How can anybody be worse than that? That's really kind of strange. That said, they weren't good last year either. Todd, it is your turn to go first here for picking who is going to win this game. The Packers are 6-point favorites. They were 6.5, so the line is starting to slide down.
Yeah, they're going to cover.
They're favored by 6.
They're obviously going to cover the spread, and they're going to be over 38 points. I got this game 31-10. Let me change it. 31-10 Packers.
31-10 Packers.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a blowout.
Maybe that's the 38, right? That's the, maybe there's some snow coming or something.
I have no idea. I didn't look at like the 10-day forecast. Regardless, I'm going to say 31-10. I think it's going to be a blowout. The Packers are going to annihilate them.
Peter, thoughts?
Yeah, I got it very similar to Todd. I've got it 28-10 to the Packers. And I think it's one of those games where I think the Packers could put up more points, but I don't think they'll need to. And so we may even see Sean Clifford in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
And Peter's probably going to win because Carlson's going to shank a kick. And that's going to be it.
So 28-10, it's going to be right at the 38. So you think that Las Vegas has nailed the over-under.
I think it's pretty damn close.
I think the Packers will win this game, too. I think they'll win it going away. I think they'll win 28-14. So they'll cover and they will go over the 38 points.
My guess is like it's hard to win in New York, period.
Is it, though? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. It's tough as an away game, but I still think that they're going to blow them out.
You were the only one to pick the Packers to beat the Chiefs, so your gut is good.
Got it. What did I say for the score? I don't even remember.
24-17, I think you said.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Look at me.
No strip fucking Domus you are.
Yeah.
Packer all right.
Fucking Domus.
So thanks for listening to episode 148 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Ken Ellis episode.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go. Go.